If you die, we're not going to keep recording. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are joined by one of our favorite returning guests, Tony Miller. He's here to talk with us about the tolerance paradox, or the idea that tolerating bad ideas might not work.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Oh, that's me.
And Tim Wick.
That's me.
And this week, our guest is returning guest, friend of the show, question man extraordinaire, Tony Miller, Seamus the Insulter.
It's mostly me.
It's mostly you. You wear a lot of hats.
I can verify he's corporeal right now. He's in our home.
I have not transubstantiated yet.
Not yet. And Tony, we want to talk about the tolerance of paradox. And changing
the tolerance paradox
and whether or not it's worth the effort to try to change people's minds, and also maybe whether or not that's ethical,
especially fundamentalists,
specifically the fundamentalists
out there.
Yes. What is the tolerance of paradox?
The tolerance paradox is, in a tolerant society, you are open to any opposing views except for those who are so intolerant they want to destroy that society, i.e. Nazis.
So much for the tolerant left.
Right.
Yeah.
Which means you have a duty to push back against those who are so intolerant they wish to destroy a multi-stranded community, a multi-stranded society. And this really came into being a while ago when the Proud Boys were very prevalent under Trump, and Richard Spencer was starting to do Man in the Street videos, and he was starting to get a lot of airtime. And then his second to last Man in the Street interview, a guy came running up, and both of these are white men who attacked him, came running up live and punched him really hard and kept running.
I've seen it so many times.
That's what started the whole, should you punch a Nazi? I literally struggled with this for about a year. I talked to some minister friends of mine. I talked to a person who does negotiations. She does mediation. Mm-hmm. She's of the mind that you can reach through nonviolent means most people. I agreed with her up until the, you know, hardcore incels, the radicalized. You may not be able to reach them, and you may be able to understand their motivations, but you do not have to tolerate it.
Right.
And the toleration, the anti-toleration, I guess, can come in many forms. In the public arena, and I've come around on this because I teach self-defense, I teach about setting boundaries and not starting violence, about de-escalation, all that sort of stuff. I think you should fucking punch a Nazi.
Yeah.
You know? The reason I say that is that we didn't go to war because of Nazis. We went to war over ideology and expansion and a whole bunch of other things. Nazism drove it. And drove some of the highest genocide in history. Now, Stalin beggared those people, and Mao beggared Stalin as far as the amount of people killed through policies. But that's an extreme version. In the United States, we have so many white nationalists. We have a huge growing fascism. One could argue we've been in a fascist society for a while with the police state and all that sort of things. But when it comes to public discourse, when it comes to dealing with people with opposing or bizarre or just not your views, I think we should be open to it. We should be open to discussion like, wow, you believe in the Bhagavad Gita. I believe in Zen Buddhism. And let's have a talk. You believe in a more socialist, liberal society. I believe in a more fiscally conservative, you know, whatever it is.
You like fucking couches. I like fucking my husband.
And we're all just fucking getting along.
For instance.
But when it comes to, wow, anyone not a white Christian male has no power, should not vote, should actually be deported and or put in concentration camps, you should be punched at the least. And so the second Richard Spencer and the last one, I remember this, it was, I think, ABC, NBC. And out of the crowd comes another one and just punches him again really hard. And that's the last time he ever went out in the street to give these man in the street in
literally deplatformed right off his fucking feet.
Right. My favorite all time. And
he was canceled in the face.
Yes. As my old instructor, martial art instructor said, never block a punch with your face. he didn't learn that one. So in Portland, my favorite one of these is in Portland. There's some nebbish little 28-year-old dude with wearing a leather jacket and a Nazi armband.
Oh, I've seen this. I've
and
seen this
a gift. Young black man just walks up to him and the guy's like, no, 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 wait. And the young man just punched him and knocked him down and kept going. And that's been set to music and stuff. I generally detest, it's very hard for me to watch real violence.
We've heard a lot about your, previous listeners may know that you have, you come from an abusive family and
not
other things.
Conservative, not abusive.
No, no, no. Wasn't there, I thought there was violence in your growing up.
There's violence to me, but it's outside the family.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was bullied a lot because
that's what I'm remembering. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
No, no. I want to make it very clear.
Yes.
While my parents had their own issues with, you know, toxic communication and stuff, there was no violence. Well, I got spanked, but there's no violence outside.
I do remember you talking about being like, you find violence to be reprehensible because I thought I remember you saying that it, because it had been used on you as a weapon, maybe it was through the bullying that
through
I'm
school.
Thinking.
Through yeah. School, yeah. Some stuff outside of school. That's what drove me into martial arts, what drove me into self-defense, the mitigation of violence, the understanding of the vectors. I watch actual violent videos on YouTube and it's very hard. I've been doing it for years because I want to see, is there a nexus point where they could have de-escalated? Where did this go south? If it went south, what could you do about it? How would you defend yourself? So that's my milieu. That's one of the things I really focus on. The tolerance paradox is that we really do need, and tolerance comes from empathy. It comes from really trying to step outside your own peoples and understanding that other peoples matter. Mark Twain said it a lot. Travel broadens one.
Yeah.
It gets rid of bigotry. And I've been watching, we talked a little bit before we started recording about our families and dealing with COVID. I've had to put my families more and more to arm's length, not because of COVID at first, but just they live in little white hermetically sealed bubbles back in their home churches, and watching them become more and more insular as they get older has been really hard to watch because I do festivals. You guys have done festivals. You come out and visit.
Tim does one.
Tim does.
You.
Yeah.
Yes.
You meet tens of thousands of people in the course of a season. I meet hundreds of thousands of people in the course of a season. All walks of life.
Oh, yeah.
And it just shows that other people, weird thought, deserve to live their own life to the best of their ability.
And it's interesting because we saw somebody at the Renaissance Festival when we were there on Labor Day wearing a Confederate flag do-rag on his head.
A participant, I guess.
Or a patron. It was hard to say.
He had the shoes.
In any event, no one got punched there because that wasn't a clear Nazi. That was just maybe a misguided dude with some who knows. But like, it wasn't like we were going to go. And that's the thing. My youngest brother struggles a lot with this whole idea of, you know, oh, well, you have this poster up on your wall that says punch Nazis. But who have you punched? I'm like, well, nobody. And he's like, well, why aren't you out there finding Nazis to punch? You're just not doing anything. I'm like, well, of course, but I don't go see, I'm not a vigilante. I'm not going out to find them and punch them, but it's more of an ethos in the sense of like no quarter, no mercy, you know,
no tolerance.
No tolerance, yeah. Exactly.
That's, Tony, I don't know if you're familiar with any of the Nazi punk stuff that happened in the Twin Cities in the 80s and 90s historically. There was a group of sharps, skinheads against racial prejudice, real skinheads, not Nazi skinheads, the Baldies. Twin Cities had a Nazi punk problem. Mm-hmm. And the solution to that problem was zero tolerance. It was the Baldies showing up wherever the Nazis showed up and escorting them out one way or another, making sure they knew they weren't welcome, because that was the only language they understood, was zero tolerance for their presence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of a punk bar anecdote about, you know, a Nazi guy coming in to a bar and sitting down at the bar.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And the bartender saying like, nope, get the fuck right out. And a guy at the bar saying like, oh, why did you kick him out? He wasn't doing anything wrong. And he's like, because he's got Nazi tattoos and This is how it starts. There's one guy behaving just fine, not causing a problem, and you don't do anything about it. So he brings his friends in, and they show up, and they don't do it. You don't do anything about it because they're not breaking any rules. And then next week, you're a Nazi bar.
Yeah. In Denver, we had a similar situation because I had friends who did the punk scene. I had two punk bouncer friends because I know violent people. And Greg would show up sometimes. And he had a few like broken knuckles and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, what's going on? Because he guarded the mosh pit.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, punk mosh pits in the, well, I got out in 82. Mm-hmm. In the mid-80s in Denver was like, it's not for the weak. But the Nazis started showing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, we're punks, blah, blah, blah. And after the first time, all the clubs started talking, and as soon as they walk through the door, they get jumped. They didn't make
it
past the entrance.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you're a Nazi? And they would literally get mule stomped.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple times, hypothetically, if someone were to, you know, listen to this, they were dragged a block away and just left in the street. And at the time, I'm like, okay. I actually applaud that because it's insidious. And to be so tolerant, that's like, well, you know, they mean well, or, oh, yes, Tim?
Sorry, I wanted to let you finish, Tony. I was just going to say something once you were done.
It is real easy to get so far down the rabbit hole of too much tolerance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be balanced. It has to be balanced with clear-sightedness and an education and understanding of the vectors that come in to destroy that society. With which you will not put up with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think the important thing about the tolerance paradox is what it states is if by being tolerant, you say we must be tolerant of the intolerant, what ends up happening is the intolerant take over.
Right.
That, mm-hmm. that if you are too tolerant of the intolerant, then your kindness, for lack of a better term, towards them is turned back on yourself. And, you know, and we see that in our society now. We see it in places like Florida where they're passing laws saying, well, you know, don't say gay in grade school because grade school children can't handle it or something, because children apparently in their minds are stupid. And I guess they've never raised children, because I had two children and they were smart. So I guess my children were, I don't know, different or something, because those intolerant and as people say, well, you're being intolerant by doing this, then the response is, well, you're being intolerant of our faith. You're being intolerant of our beliefs by letting drag queens read stories to children, or you're being intolerant of our beliefs by introducing a book into a school where a kid has two dads. And
you raised, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You raised something really interesting, because you said the big word, which was belief. You're not respecting my beliefs. Okay, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If your beliefs are such that you go after and demonize an othered minority who already have no power, who have less power and are actually attacked physically for mm-hmm. simply existing, tell me how that is your tolerant. And I'm going to use this because we see it a lot in the pseudo-Christianized, politicized world that we live in. How is that Christian?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember your Jesus sitting down with the ones who are othered in society, the Samaritans, the lepers, the prostitutes, those, the Gentiles. He was renowned for that. The later stories accreted to him, you know, after, you know, I'd say about 100 to 200 years, as more and more of the institutionalized church came into being, there are more stories, and they still upheld that Jesus was a champion of the downtrodden, the othered, those not looked at well in society. So by their very own, and yes, we could talk endlessly about, and we have, about the hypocrisy of Christians. Mm-hmm. The ones we don't hear about are the ones who are walking their faith, who are doing the soup kitchens, mm-hmm. who are doing mm-hmm. the opening the church for the unhoused. But I find, and since we are Geeks Without God, since we are talking about atheism, I find so much that if an ideology gets between you and basic human kindness mm-hmm. and empathy, where you throw out your own children,
yes.
where you follow one of the single most reprehensible politicians in my entire life, who is degrading himself daily, and you think he is a Christian, or he is, well, he's being used by God, and he's one of the most vile, divisive, hateful people out there. That's where this ideology of master servant, of giving yourself over, of, you know, faith before thought kind of stuff comes in. And that's what gets rid of a tolerant society.
We, you know, you've on the podcast in the past, we've talked about with you how Christianity is a religion of persecution, and it's kind of baked into the whole ethos of Christianity that they are victims, that they are persecuted, that they are hurt for their belief in Christianity, which isn't really a thing that happens for real.
Not in the United States.
Not in the United States. Surely that's not. Fair. That's fair. I think that the lies they tell themselves, fundamentalists, radical conservative people, tell themselves these lies to make themselves feel threatened, to make their people feel scared, so that they can do violence with the same excuse that we might use to excuse violence against Nazis, right? Mm-hmm. Like their way of life is threatened, their, you know, the great replacement theory, shit like that, where they view that as a threat to them and to their security and to their well-being. And so I'm sure there are some right-wing assholes out there that are, without using the same arguments, without using the same terms, saying things like, you know, well, it's okay to punch, you know, a trans person because they're groomers and they're going to hurt our kids and that's, whatever.
I've actually heard that exact argument used about bombing abortion clinics.
Right.
And that if you think it's okay to punch a Nazi, why is it not okay to bomb an abortion clinic? Because we are doing that to end murders. We are ceasing murder. You cannot argue that. And it's interesting because when I worked at Planned Parenthood doing abortions, one of the first things that we were told in our training was this nurse. And she was she said, you know, I want you to know I'm a Catholic and I believe that every life is sacred and I work here. And she's like, oh, everyone's wondering, how is that? How does that work? And she's like, because I believe in upholding the law and upholding, you know, at the time they said a woman's right to choose and that there are women in desperate situations. And she said, plenty of women who get abortions are Catholic. Plenty of women who get abortions, you know, have kids already. Plenty of women who get abortions don't want to be here. Most of them don't want to be here. But she said, but you can't deny that we are ending a life. And she's like, and if you genuinely don't believe that, then you're doing a disservice to our patients. And that was a really eye-opening thing for me to hear at like 24 or 25 years old, is this idea that like you have to at least acknowledge what is happening here. But that acknowledgement, you know, that fact is so divisive, because for some people that is the same as murdering a human being, right, who is outside of a womb, yeah, versus ending a life. And it's funny to me how it was funny because in that moment I raised my hand and I was like, I'm just curious how many people in here eat meat. And there was this long pause and everyone's like, I'm like, is anyone a vegetarian? They're like, why are you? I'm like, no, that's kind of my point. You know, and it's like,
it's ending a life.
But yeah. And everyone kind of went, oh, because the moment had gotten so heavy, as you saw, yeah, a bunch of people being like, oh my God, what am I doing here? And it was like, but that's kind of, you know, you can't, let's not like get so fucking twisted about it here. But it's interesting because, you know, everyone's sense of morals and ethics is their own, even though people think that if you have your own morals or your own ethics, you're a bad person. But that is, we all have our own morals and our own ethics, as evidenced by the idea of what do you do when you're alone. And I think that for some people, it's just so difficult to separate that idea of this is a bad thing and no one should do it from what should be the punishment for it. There was that video that went around a few years ago that was, if abortion is murder, what should the punishment be for getting an abortion? Mm-hmm. And granted, it's an edited video, but almost everyone in the video who was out protesting at this abortion clinic was like, well, that's between them and God.
Yeah.
Or, well, I mean, they've been punished enough.
Yeah.
And no one was saying, well, it should be prison or
the death penalty
like any other murder. And it's like, so then what's the difference? And it's just, it has come to my attention so dramatically over the last 4 years that the majority of adults I know don't interrogate their feelings.
Oh, no.
And don't interrogate their choices or their thoughts and don't reflect. And even people who think they do, even people who think they are introspective or that they're, oh, I'm a liberal or I'm very progressive. They don't actually sit and just in silence think about what it is to be a human.
So that, I love that commentary, because it kind of leads into the other thing Tony was talking about, or wanted to talk about, which is the idea of challenging other people's beliefs. And mm-hmm. should one challenge other people's beliefs? And is it ethical to challenge other people's beliefs? And I think that what you just said, Molly, that most people don't challenge their own beliefs.
That's right. They challenge others, though.
To me, makes it a real interesting question. You know, if we assume that people are not doing a good job of challenging what they believe, is it right for us to not say anything? Is it ethical for us to not say, well, have you thought about this?
So help me understand the argument for why trying to change someone's beliefs, especially if they are vile beliefs, is unethical.
I
don't understand the argument.
I've only read a little bit about it. And one of it is, do you as a human being have the right to tell anybody else what to think?
Oh, libertarianism. Okay.
You know, this came from our friend Martin. So genuinely, the idea being like, is it, and it's not, this is the thing. He's a philosopher. Philosophers don't ask questions because they already have an answer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They ask the question because let's talk about the question.
Sure.
So
sure.
I don't know what the argument is so much as it is a question, and let's talk about it.
Tony, you'd get along with Martin like a house on fire.
Yeah, sounds like it. To kind of jump in here, as far as is it ethical to confront someone about their beliefs? Yes. In context, and it depends. Mm-hmm. There's a violence teacher that I follow. He does hardcore self-defense, and he goes, there's no such thing as never or always.
Sure.
And so when it comes to challenging beliefs, do the beliefs lend themselves to the common good of a society? And yes, that is a broad statement. That's a broad definition, and there's nuance, and there's all sorts of things. Let's just take, I'd like to step into, is it worthwhile to engage, you know, evangelicalism or fundamentalism mm-hmm. in particular? And I'm going to be talking specifically about fundamentalist Christianity. I'm somewhat familiar with fundamentalist Islamicism and Buddhism, actually. But for right now, let's just, because Christianity and the political version of Christianity is what drives the society and is used as a most powerful tool.
Christofascism.
Yeah, it's, and we're in it. Having said that, is it worthwhile to engage evangelicals? Is it worthwhile? Because among us all, I've had my belief challenged, and I've talked about this in regards of depression, my views mm-hmm. on depression, because I had a person with depression who became a very good friend, and she challenged me on my beliefs. Mm. And once again, our beliefs sometimes, a lot of times, make up our identity. So if you challenge someone's beliefs, they take it as an attack on their identity. And so they'll react very defensively, very angrily. And it can be challenging to, especially if you can do it engaging in conversationally as opposed to debatedly.
Definitely.
Casually.
Casually. Yeah. And with kindness and with being the ability to listen, the Socratic method of, oh, you believe that, you know, Jesus rose from the dead. Why do you believe that? And not just, why do you believe that? But just, why do you actually believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's engage that. Anytime we get into a discussion, it's always important to define labels first. Even if you don't agree with their label, it gives us a jumping off point.
Making sure you're using common language.
Yeah. And I have found, and I've brought this up a few times, so I'll bring it up again, as question man, especially in North Carolina and actually here in Minnesota, I get asked more religious questions. Is there a God? Is there a heaven?
Interesting.
Is there a hell? And I'm like, okay, that's a great question. How do you define heaven?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you do that, once you start listening, then you can start talking. And I go back to this, and I never thought this existed years ago, an evangelical Catholic.
Hmm.
I'm like, an evangelical Catholic? Mm-hmm. That's, I've never heard of that.
Is and the Pope not good enough?
The current one at the time, no.
I see. That's the issue.
And we started talking, and but she was bringing up young earth stuff. And I said, well, that's not the Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She says, well, you know, the new readings I've been doing. I'm like, oh, okay. But she was so upset. She wrote me two actual letters. And then the next year she showed up with her brother, who's even mm-hmm. more of a zealot.
Mm-hmm.
And we had pretty much about an hour long running debate. And I don't know if I changed his viewpoint, but she was looking at me the whole time and she was actually listening. And mm-hmm. so it's our duty, I think, in these kind of confrontations, and it is a confrontation, to listen, to be respectful so that they can't use that straw man fallacy of an atheist who, mm-hmm. you know, hates God and stuff.
Yes. Here's an interesting wrinkle to this conversation. Now, what if we're taking, I believe in the context that this question was asked among my a group of my friends, the conversation that was being discussed was a person who was asserting that, so I don't know if you know about Tim Walz right now mm-hmm. and his National Guard service being called into question. Was he,
is he a
coward? Did he, you know, did he leave his platoon behind and all this stuff? And this person was assured of the facts of the situation being that, yes, he did. He was a bad person. Like he, and had all these like facts coming from Tim Walz's brother, who is a conservative nutbag by all accounts, and who has Tim Walz has gone no contact with, or low contact at least, and has been very, very loudly talking to all of the dutiful conservatives who are happy to listen to him about this because they don't have much on this guy because he's a genuinely good person. And so they're really grasping. And the idea of this with this question was, so is it ethical to try to change someone's mind about facts? And is it worth your time? So if they have been told a set of facts that they are convinced are facts, how can you even possibly convince them those are not facts? And how do you convince them of the right of things? Now, this also ties into something Nick's dad brought up recently to us, which is you can't trust the media. Nobody in the, everybody in the, did you guys know this, that everybody in the media has bias? Were you aware that a human being writing something has their own implicit bias when they do that?
You'll see one news station give the same story as the other, but in one news story, she's eloquent and brilliant, and in the other one, she's a bumbling buffoon.
The words they use really show you what they think about a person. It was very cute, but the point being that, you know, so you say to this guy, here's a bunch of links that show you the story. These are all links that say these are people saying the truth about these facts and how you're wrong. And they say, those are sites I don't trust. And they don't say, and I would never believe anything they say. They're just telling you what you want to hear. How can you engage with a person like that? And is it, one, worth your time? And two, is it ethical to try to convince this person that their world is wrong?
So one of the first things Tony said was, if you're engaging with people like this, you need a willingness to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes both ways. And so if they're not willing to look at the information that you're providing, but they only want you to look at their information, you're not having a conversation
anymore. What if I'm not willing to listen to their Newsmax links?
Well, see, you guys just touched on a point. I'm talking more of people who are willing to come up and ask a question and actually engage in conversation.
Sure.
Someone who comes up and starts spouting what you're talking about, the mm-hmm. Tim Walz thing, and, you know, and the National Guard actually came out and said, no, he served very well. And so when the actual National Guard comes out and people are like, no, they're wrong. When you engage with someone, it's the very first question I ask, if I come up with an actual fact that would counter against what your belief, would you change your beliefs? And, you know, you can't trust anything. Now we're not having a conversation.
Yep. Sure.
So I engage these people sometimes, and I've said this before, not for them, but for anyone who's watching.
Yes, sure. We've talked about this actually. Yeah.
Because if they can see me going, okay, I don't agree with you for this reason, and we're, you know, and it is a bit of a performance, and we're all actors, sure. We're all entertainers. I have to dial that up sometimes because inside I'm going, you're a blithering idiot. And it's stupid people like you are killing this society and the world and the environment around us.
Seamus can't come out. Question Man is here.
Yeah.
For $5, Seamus will come out.
You're a cock gobbler. I'm sorry. Questions.
Why don't you defenestrate your own colon, you motherfucker? Yeah. I used that this last weekend and, you know, I just get cricket eyes, but sometimes I say things just for myself. Yeah. I have had more, evangelicals in North Carolina come up afterwards and go, wow, that was a really good conversation. Thank you. Like, oh, I'm not a straw man atheist. Mm-hmm. I don't hate God. I'm not in league with the devil. I don't believe in any of that. I'm willing to listen. Mm-hmm. I do debate you, but at the end of the day, I'm treating you with respect. And
I've been one fewer God than you do.
Yeah. I've said that. I've used that one before. Yeah. Tim?
Yeah. I think we've talked about this a little bit before in that back when my brother-in-law still followed me on social media and I followed him, it was during the Colin Kaepernick era where
I remember that
he was kneeling during football games and my brother-in-law was former military and talked about Kaepernick disrespecting the military and for some reason, even though he's not particularly religious, was talking about what's the name of the I'm forgetting the super Christian quarterback. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Tim Tebow.
Thank you, Tim Tebow, and how it was a different situation. And I engaged him and I debated him on it a lot, and said, well, nobody was burning Tim Tebow jerseys. And then he went and found a video of somebody burning a Tim Tebow jersey. And I said, okay, but let's look at this. This is right after his team lost a game in the playoffs. And this is one of the fans of that team really pissed that he lost a football game. They weren't burning his jersey because he was taking a knee during the national anthem.
Yeah.
Your controller because you lost in Mario Party.
Yeah. Do you understand the difference? And he would get really, really angry and defensive about it. And my mom eventually said, why do you do this? Why are you engaging him? And I said, because other people are reading this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they deserve, on his really unhinged railing about this, to see somebody presenting an alternative point of view. I don't think I'm going to change his mind. Certainly not on Facebook. Nobody ever did that. But for people that are on the fence, maybe I've got a chance to not push them to prevent him from pushing them in the direction of intolerance. So
and this is the last thing I'll say. Years ago when the first Gulf War hit and my brother-in-law, JR, ooh, I named him. Sorry.
I'm sure he listens. So we're in trouble.
Yeah.
JR, our biggest fan.
Yeah. He's out of Colorado and he's the one who always sends the stink bombs. No, the Gulf War was in about a week, and JR was always he's the guy that carries a concealed weapon to the Thanksgiving dinner. And we've gone round and round about that. Anyway, he goes, yeah, we should just nuke them all, let God sort the rest. Uh-huh. And I looked at him and went, well, who would Jesus bomb?
WWJB.
And I didn't say it in a snarky way. It was just that, tried to dial up that really kind little boy. And, well, JR. And I just looked at him, and man, did he get uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
It's like, good. You're always spouting Jesus and God. Mm-hmm. Yes, your God hates the same people you do. And isn't that remarkable?
It's so convenient.
But it's like, I said, you literally just talked about killing millions of men, women, and children who have nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And he got really pink faced and he got really upset and the table got uncomfortable, but I just kept staring at him going, roast on it, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Because to engage a fundamentalist when they say things in the public forum, I think you're duty bound as a person who wants to represent a tolerant society. I'm bringing it full circle here.
Oh, nice. Well done.
Thank you. To push back against the narrative that, well, my beliefs are just as valid as yours. They are until they harm society and other people. Yes, we talk about violence against Nazis. Can you equate that with violence against abortion providers? In some people's minds, you can.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, obviously. And this is where conversation needs to happen. This is where dialogue needs to happen. But when it comes to actual people going out of the way, people who go against abortion providers, and this may sound a little, I don't know, Machiavellian real world politic, are going after a specific segment of society. Nazis are going against the entire society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we do have to do delineations. We do have to pick our fights.
I will say that I think, unfortunately, for the majority of us, the majority of the interaction we have with the public at large is through the internet. And mm-hmm. because it is through the internet, people talk differently. They behave differently. If you were talking to your brother-in-law and having that exact same conversation online with time to sit and, oh, let me think about this. You know, what am I going to say? You know, and it's in the moment. It's in the real world moments when somebody is caught that they now, you know, get frustrated. And I think that because I had to stop myself from commenting on posts about, it's funny, I keep seeing these like Facebook memories from like 8-9 years ago that are like, no, Molly, we are not going to discuss abortion online anymore. We talked about this. And a big reason is because like, these are people who have a different set of facts from me. Their facts are it's murder. My fact is it fucking isn't. And that's stupid. And it is impossible to have a rational conversation. I'm sure they feel the same way. They're like, she can't be talked to. She's irrational. She doesn't even hear herself. And that is when you are talking to someone and you're in your brain, you're like, Jesus, it's like talking to a wall. They're thinking the same thing. And that is where I feel like we're coming to this really strict divide. That's really hard because so many of us are only having social interactions online, or that's where the majority of our social interaction comes from. And everybody is braver behind a keyboard. You know, they thought, when I say they, I mean like these corporations who own social media companies thought that maybe forcing you to use your real legal name would make people behave better. YouTube made it that you had to have your real name. You had to log in, no more anonymous, anything, thinking it would make people be less racist, less sexist. It did not. And we found that a significant number of people were gleefully happy to be very racist about everything and wore it as a badge of honor. And so now we've got people wearing, you know, maxi pads on their ears and talking about how they hate immigrants and gleefully, you know, saying this sort of thing, because to them, that is their rainbow pin. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. their breast cancer ribbon, is to say
virtue signaling.
That's their virtue signaling, is to say, you know, horrible things about a woman and death threats to a black guy. Like it is just astonishing to me.
Yeah. You know, in nerd social circles online, you see a lot of people talking about the concept of gatekeeping, keeping someone out of your hobby or out of your interest because they're not a real nerd, they're not a real fan.
They don't pass the PA test.
They don't, right. You know, you didn't play the original Mario Brothers. You're not a real gamer.
I've been coming to this bar since 1979.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that there's a significant difference between gatekeeping and curating your online experience in a responsible way. I participate in a whole bunch of shitposting groups online where people just make memes and post stupid stuff, usually on a theme like, oh, this one's for, you know, X-Men or The Good Place or whatever. And I only participate in the groups that are well moderated. And have rules against trash, transphobia, racism, ableism, sexism, and homophobia. Trash. Nice and convenient.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
That's a good one. Could you text that to me?
Absolutely. I like that. Yeah. And so all these groups are no trash groups, or left book, as some people will call it. These people aren't gatekeeping. So when people talk about like no tolerance for racism, no tolerance for bigotry, for Nazis, part of that is the majority of that is nonviolent. Mm-hmm. When you say like Nazis only understand violence, sure, but like denying them room to express their beliefs can be a nonviolent thing. and kicking people out of a Facebook group because they said something transphobic is a form of activism. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there are all sorts of different pockets of the internet, and the internet is made of people, and people are, you know, good and bad and say shitty things and do nice things. And so if you can curate your online experience to only participate in places that are well moderated, and that carve out those spaces for vulnerable people to participate safely and comfortably, that's the fucking way to go. I mean, that is like, I don't want to sound trite and whatever, but when your brother Molly says, like, where are you going there and punch a Nazi? I am reporting comments to admins. That is my punching a Nazi online, is getting these people removed from these spaces for their shitty fucking behavior.
It's funny you should mention him, because my little brother goes through a lot of, he needs a lot of therapy from us, from me specifically. I'm like a second mom, but like, we talk a lot about his beliefs, and he got really swept up in the Gamergate stuff. Ooh. And was, you know, parroting things that he'd read online, and we had to, you know, say, stop reading stuff about feminism. Just stop. It was like, Riley, you were raised by women. Just stop. And he's like, okay. And that helped. It really did. But I will say, if you are logging on every day and you find yourself just getting angry and so full of rage and you can't sleep at night, maybe just think about what you're following and what you're reading, and you can disengage. And I've, a couple of friends I've had recently where I've had to say this, a friend who was like, I don't know if I can watch the debate, which is happening right now as we are recording. I don't know if I can watch the debate, you guys. And it's like, you know, the outcome of the election does not depend on whether or not you watch this debate. Mm-hmm. It won't affect it at all. You don't have to watch the debate.
There's going to be a million news stories tomorrow with video clips of the whole thing.
And I will say, I think one of the most dangerous ideas that's been floated around recently, that I see being repeated a lot, is if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Now, that is an old slogan, and that is accurate. However, we are now victims, customers of an outrage machine. Mm. There are multiple of them, and we all log into them every single day. And that is how they pay their bills. There are CEOs out there who make million-dollar bonuses based on how angry you are willing to get and whether or not you are willing to engage with content that makes you angry. That is their goal. So if you find yourself getting angry and going to click that anger button, or you're going to comment and you're going to go, you're going to fucking tell them, do you need to? Like, that is
selective.
Is it helpful? Do you, I mean, genuinely, or are you screaming into a void that makes money for somebody?
Yeah. While we may all have a responsibility to confront the evils of the world and do what we can to make the world a better place, our time, sanity, and, you know, spoons or whatever word term you want to use are consumable, perishable resources. And we, you know, what is it? A revolutionary's first duty is to not get caught. If you burn out, you're not going to be able to do good later. You got to protect yourself too.
A thing my brother repeated to us that had got him a little spun up was the idea that all that it takes for tyranny to prevail is for good men to stand aside and do nothing. And he's like, I'm a good man, so I should go buy a gun. And it's like, no. And he's like, I should kill people. And it's like, no. And he's like, I mean, like,
bad people,
but still, he's like, isn't that what we should do? And it's like, no. And he's like, well, I don't understand. All these people are talking about guillotines and making like stickers, and there's like guillotine stickers, and people keep talking about the French Revolution.
Eat the rich.
The only way the French Revolution worked was they murdered people. And it's like, that's true. And he's like, why aren't we murdering people then? I'm like, because we shouldn't murder people. And it's like,
if he does bring that up, it's like, check the actual history of
true.
Guillotining. Yes. Yeah, they started off with nobles, but man, they started once the mob crazy. Gets in control.
Yep. Yeah. And so like, but you have to understand that, you know, it's when you think about, you know, as George Carlin said, think about the average person and then realize half the people are dumber than that guy. Like, that's fucking scary.
What's the line from Men in Black? A person can be smart, but people are dumb.
Yes.
Dumb, panicky
people are
animals.
Dumb, panicky animals. I think about that all the time.
Single best summation of Absolutely. People in general I've seen in a long time.
And I think that, you know, what Tony does, what you do with the answer, man, and I think what I try to do when I choose to engage with somebody I disagree with online is if you get angry, it's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I'm choosing to engage with them, once again, I'm not so worried about what they think. I'm worried about what other people might choose to believe. So in those situations, it's like, I think you need to engage in a fashion that is not angry. I can't be angry at somebody for being a conservative Christian, because they themselves, in my mind, are a victim of a society that has that has indoctrinated them, right? I mean, you know, your relatives, Tony, have kids, right? Mm. And they spend all of their lives being fed this programming. You know, they're sent to Sunday school, they're taken to church, they pray before dinner, and their parents, I'm sure, talk about their beliefs in relation to what's going on. And those kids are going to have kids that also may be indoctrinated, unless at some point they start questioning and they meet up with somebody who's willing to have an adult conversation with them and not just turn it into a shouting match.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because my great nephew and niece, the last time I saw them, my sister and her whole family got together. I haven't seen them in a few years, and I really love them. They're very bright kids. The oldest is 10, the youngest one is 6, and they had a gift. They had gifts for me. They made them up on their own. You know, the parents said, we had nothing to do with it, blah, 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 and they came out. The youngest one, Marcus, gave me a cross that he made out of wood with, you know, inscriptions, and then they gave me a colored Bible verse, you know, with the coloring and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my niece, my great niece, wrote a letter saying how that I really should turn my life over to Jesus. She was really afraid that I would not meet up in heaven.
And the parents had nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with it.
I read and it was long. And she goes, I'm really worried about you, you know, great uncle. And, you know, I love you. And I think it's the hardest thing you ever need to do, but you need to turn to Jesus, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm reading this horrific thing.
One, yeah.
It was so disrespectful.
Right.
Because I have never come out against those kids at any time and challenged
their kids
or their parents, because it's like, if I have their kids with me for, you know, Uncle Tony Day, where I take them to movies or something, if they ask questions, I'll answer with the idea that what their parents believe.
Mm-hmm.
And what they, and the whole, my sister's whole family was there, and there's like 16 people, and they're watching, oh, isn't this so nice? They made it up. And I'm like, this was so fucking disrespectful. Yeah. And my great niece actually worries about me enough to write a letter. Mm-hmm. Do you guys not see how wrong this is?
A 6-year-old is all twisted up in her little heart.
She was 10, but she, this is guaranteed. And it's like, this is how you talk about
it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, Tim, because as you're saying all this, I'm thinking, and they think the same about your kids. They think the same about your kids are indoctrinated. You take them to Convergence where they see depravity and they see transgender people, and you don't take them to church, and they're fed all this, you know, woke communists.
They are. Of hell.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are. That we feed them woke cereal every morning.
I've seen them.
It's tasty.
And the amazing thing about that is that people think that, and of course they're not necessarily wrong. I did not take my children to church, but I also did say, your grandmother is a Catholic, and if you want to go to church and see what that's like, your grandmother will be happy to take you.
Yeah.
And if you want to understand why your grandmother believes what she believes, she will be happy to talk to you about it. All I can do is talk to you about what I think is right.
The woke agenda.
And the woke agenda. But if you would like, grandma was pretty indoctrinated into the woke agenda as well. But nonetheless,
Jesus did that to her.
Jesus did that. We let the kids watch YouTube. The anti-woke agenda is out there. It's not hard to find.
Yeah. It's in her face.
Yeah. You've got young white men. They could find it if they wanted to.
It's easy as all get out. But it is interesting, because I think there is that, and that's part of, I think, what Tony with the answer man, and what you have to kind of fight back against is, there is this belief that there is indoctrination, when in most of the time it's simply trying not to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've told this story many times on this podcast, but it's been a little while, so maybe people haven't heard it recently, but that when Alex was in Boy Scouts and we had to do a thing on religion, and I sat him down not really knowing what to say as somebody who's not religious. And I said, you know, your mom and I, we don't really think that a God exists. And Alex just said, yeah, I don't think I do either. And we hadn't spent any time talking to mm-hmm. him. He had come to that conclusion on his own. And when we talked to our kids about homosexuality, and all we said was, well, some men love other men and some women love other women. And that's just love. And our kids were like, oh, okay. And I realized that was woke and that I indoctrinated
you indoctrinated
my children.
Them into that.
How much were you paid by the liberal agenda, Tim?
God, I wish I was paid more. I'll tell you what, because it works super well.
I will say, Tim, earlier you were saying, you know, that it's hard, you know, if you're going to engage with people online, don't engage from a place of anger. And it's unfortunate for the three of you that you are not women, because let me tell you, the best way to engage with anyone is to pretend that you are stupid and make them explain themselves over and over. And it's great. If you can just be like, especially when, I don't know, maybe your profile picture is you with a big smile and curly hair looking pretty. And you're like, I don't understand. And then let them explain more and go, huh, I guess I just don't understand. And just like they keep going and you're like, so you're saying that, and then try to re-paraphrase it. But like take what they're saying and make it woke. And then they get super mad and they're like, no, you're not. And it's just, but like, that is a power given to all of us non-men. And if you are not a man, I highly suggest you weaponize it, because it's so fun.
I've used this rhetorical device many times. It's fabulous.
It's the best way to respond to a racist joke.
Oh, totally.
I don't get it. Explain that.
So are you saying the N-words are lazy?
Why is it funny?
Oh, why is it funny? Yeah. They just come to a stuttering halt.
Yeah.
Do we need to get to five questions?
Let's get to five questions.
Oh, my God. Five questions.
Tony, you've been a guest a number of times on the podcast,
yes.
And you are a professional question comer-upper with her.
I am question man, Tim. You keep calling me answer man, but
Ron, you comer upper with her.
Thank you. Oh, wow. That's good. So I saw this meme and it was really great. If you could pick one fantastical device from any story and make it in real time, or if it be in real time, what would you pick?
The young lady's primer from A Diamond Age.
Oh, young lady's
from Diamond, from the Diamond Age.
It's
a young lady's illustrated primer from Neal Stephenson's Diamond Age. It is an incredible book. You would love this book.
Yeah, it's a nanotech,
fantastic book
from a neo-Victorian era. Yep.
And it involves real-time actors known as Ractors, who are employed to do this speaking to you. And
it's like a Mechanical Turk.
Yeah, the book creates stories and teaches you about the world. And there's only three ever made, and they fall into the hands of three very different little girls. And it's a great book. But yes, that I've always thought that would be a fantastic device.
That would be cool, Tim.
You know, my first instinct was to say a lightsaber, but I would almost certainly cut my hand off within 5 minutes of having a real lightsaber.
Ruin your house.
Yeah, and I would kill my cats. It would be a bad thing. So I'm going to go a little older school and say a babblefish would be amazing.
Yeah. Would love a babblefish.
That would be amazing.
But I'm going to go a different direction and say a mother box from New Genesis and the DC comics.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It is a bit of a handheld supercomputer before mobile phones existed. And it also opens boom tubes to let you teleport around anywhere. And sometimes it grants you extraordinary powers depending on who's writing the comic.
Hmm. Nice. The Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I thought of that.
Why go for half measures?
Get ready for this, because I just had this come out, so I'm going to go through this list pretty quick. The first thing I do is get rid of all plastics, fertilizers, and pollution in our environment and the people who make those outside of medical plastics. I would cast the environment back to 16th century pre-colonial society. I would have a pan-continental indigenous settler government be there would be no money. There would be communities, and everyone would have access to education and healthcare. That's just to start.
Is the Infinity Gauntlet like a monkey's paw? Like, do you have to be really specific when you make that snap?
Well, Thanos, because he's a genocidal maniac, got rid of 50% of all life in the universe.
Right.
Because he said that would balance things out.
So the microbes?
He got rid of 50% of all ecosystems. It destroyed all the good
bacteria in my guts disappeared, and I had to shit myself.
Well, only half of it, Molly. Only half of it.
Yeah, but if I lose any of it, I want to die.
He actually had a he did not have a good vision for that. Yeah. And so I would keep going, you know, the redefinition of the coding of the humanity so that we would actually be more hospitable.
Oh, he's just...
as one person said, I'd be snapping so fast it sounded like a hummingbird.
You're playing the spoons in a jug band.
Okay. Second question.
Yeah.
If you had to eat one specific food for the rest of your life, what would you eat?
Can I ask how specific?
It has to be very specific. A hamburger.
Could you say pizza and then any kind of pizza?
No.
Specifically.
A specific type of pizza.
For me,
it'd be a grilled hamburger.
I would say salad because salad's kind of my go-to thing.
But I think you have to pick a specific kind of salad.
The specific kind of salad would really be the kind of salad that I make.
Yeah, Tim salad.
You can't just say pizza.
I've heard of
which
Tim
means
salads.
If you can't just say pizza,
but I can't say
you
like
can't just say salad.
But I can't say Cobb salad or Caesar salad because that's
you
not
have to
what
pick
I
a
want.
Salad.
It's the specific type of salad Tim makes.
It's the salad I make.
Variation.
No, but that's he makes different salads.
Yeah, yeah. But could I answer this question and say my wife's goulash?
Yeah.
But that's
how is that
one,
different?
Because he makes different salads.
Well, okay,
no,
tell you what,
we're saying it would have to be the same salad every time.
So Tim,
he doesn't.
The next salad you make as Tim salad, that's it for the rest of your life.
Okay, then that would be what it would be.
Okay. All right,
there you go.
Yeah,
I think I know Molly's.
What do you think it is?
I think it's one of a few different kinds of specific sushi.
So it's funny. I was going to say salmon nigiri specifically, or just like. Salmon sashimi. I guess I would just eat raw salmon for the rest of my life, but I would
be seen you like go to the all you can eat sushi place and be like, I'd like 50 salmon sashimi, please.
But like I'm tempted to say salad because I like Tim am a big fan of salad, but I guess I would pick a specific one. And in that case, I would pick romaine lettuce with balsamic vinaigrette that I have that doesn't have onions with strawberries and goat cheese. That would be the salad I would eat for the rest of my life.
Okay. If I say
that sounds
cheese
good.
Pizza, can I get a cheese pizza from different restaurants? Sure. Or do I have to be more specific? Okay.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Your hamburger too. Yeah. You can get different hamburgers.
Then I say cheese pizza.
Okay.
Everybody likes cheese. If you like pizza, you like cheese pizza.
Okay.
Maybe a little heavy on the sauce if I had my way.
I would also kill myself within just a few weeks. I can tell you that right now.
I'm going to presume that the one food you have has all your nutrient value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. I would still, the absolute repetitiveness of it would end me.
I would get sick of my favorite food awfully quickly.
Of course, it'd take me about a month, but
yeah,
I ate pizza every day for 4 months when I was a pizza delivery guy, and still like pizza.
Yeah, same there on both
question.
Counts.
So Harold Gould wrote a book called Wild Side, in that this young boy discovered that his grandfather had a gate into a parallel Earth where humans never developed. So it was basically, it was much cooler. There were, you know, the saber-toothed tigers were still running around.
Homo sapiens didn't develop?
Homo sapiens.
Homo erectus.
No hominid.
No hominid.
No, nothing. No greater nothing apes took its above. Place.
And nothing took its place. We didn't have lemurs that developed.
So chimpanzee is basically the top for intelligence when it comes to development. Great.
Yeah. And so they started using this very discreetly. And of course, the government agency got involved, blah, blah, blah. So if you had a gate into a parallel virgin world.
Mm-hmm.
With no hominids, would you tell anyone about it?
Yes, but it would be very select. I'd have to be very careful because I feel like the second it became wider knowledge, I have just condemned an entire planet to ruin.
I would have to tell Nick because he would want to know where I was going all the time.
And
to be with the goats.
And I think... maybe to expand on that. I would also keep it. Oh boy, I don't know.
It ripples out, doesn't it?
I think I would have to keep it in my pocket as an escape mechanism. If I had to pick, like, okay, well, humanity is about to be completely wiped out by climate change apocalypse, or we can escape to this other world that we might potentially ruin, I think the second choice is maybe the more ethical choice, in my opinion. And so while I would be loath to share it with anyone and I would protect it with utmost secrecy, if it ever got to a point where we needed a plan B world, I would then have to share it. I'd be obligated to. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'd do it right this time. We wouldn't.
I've changed my mind slightly because I would tell Nick, but also I would only tell Nick because I'm going to destroy the portal.
Huh.
I'm going to find a way to destroy the portal. That portal shouldn't exist. Okay. They deserve to be left alone.
Tim? Okay.
I mean, I think I need to make really clear I would never use it because I would die in days.
Tim hates fish.
Yeah.
There's probably tons of fish there.
There's probably
I'd be so worried about getting trapped there. Like, if I don't understand how it works.
Yeah. And much as I love nature, I love nature as long as there are trails and there's someplace to get back to.
To your point, Tim, the grandfather was found on the other side. He broke his leg and the saber tooth got him.
Ah, mm-hmm. See?
Because
that's
there's
what I'm
no,
talking about. Mm-hmm. Saber-tooth tigers are cool, but saber-tooth tigers will also eat you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just so I would never use it. So I suppose I would likely tell somebody that I trusted implicitly. Like I would tell Pat, because I would know she would never tell anybody else. I don't even know if I would tell my kids because I think they would accidentally tell somebody else without
I wouldn't
even
tell your
thinking
kids.
About it.
Your kids? I wouldn't tell your kids.
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell any kids.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even kids anymore, but you know what I mean? There's the kind of personality that they would let it slip without even thinking about it. It wouldn't be out of malice. It just would be an accident.
No, right.
So if I trusted somebody implicitly, sure, I would tell them, but it would be a very, very limited group of people.
Because I've read the book, they knew where the gold deposits were in that local area. I would then get that, use that, and actually start contacting people around the world and invite them very quickly and get them started on a better start to a civilization.
I think that's noble, and I have come to have a more realistic view of my capabilities and my stick-to-itiveness for things like that. And I don't think I'm up to that challenge, though I think that's fucking awesome. And I would love for that to happen. I'm not the person who could make that happen.
I'm more than willing to help you, Tony.
Thank you.
I would point out that I would actually probably have to take Nick through the portal before I would believe the portal was real.
Yeah.
I have a history of delusion and would be convinced I was going crazy and would have to be like, hey, come into the closet for a second. Yeah. Do you see another world over there where no hominids ever developed? Or do I have to go to the hospital again?
So fourth question. I love this in Dr. Strange when at the end of one of his hallways, there are the doors with magic doorknobs and you open it up and you could go anywhere. Instead, think of a window.
Okay.
So if you could have a window that could look out over and you couldn't go through the window.
Right.
If you wanted
it's painted shut by your landlord.
You could open it to get, a different breeze or something like that, but you couldn't go through the window.
Sure. It's got a screen.
It's got a magic screen.
See Eric Clapton's kid?
What would you like to see through the window?
It's safe. Like if I had the window open to vacuum and I chose not to open the window.
No, you couldn't open it in vacuum.
Great.
But it's got built-in safeguards.
Okay. But so, you can have a window to anywhere. And if you could open it, if it's safe, but yeah,
it's you to anywhere. Yeah.
Saturn.
Keep going.
I think Saturn a view of out from Saturn so that you could see the rings and periodically see some of the other gas giants very closely. I think as it rotated and revolved, I think would be pretty fucking awesome. I think that would be great as a view out the window.
Mine would be the from the moon of Titan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jupiter's shape. Yeah,
totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Jupiter is like the solar system's biggest lava lamp. Like, yeah. That would be fucking awesome.
It was a failed sun.
Yeah.
So
that's
cool.
Because Jupiter is stupider. Jim, what about you?
Actually, because I'm not making eye contact with you.
For me, yeah, it would be Yosemite National Park, specifically the view of Yosemite Canyon from Glacier Point.
Nice.
I would like the Midnight Zone or maybe the Abyssal Trench. I want I want an underwater. I want to be able to see way down deep where we can't see. And I want to just see what floats by, because every now and then I want to open a curtain and just scare the absolute shit out of myself.
Does it? That would do it. In Molly's case, since there's no light down there, it is basically absolutely dark. Mm-hmm. Does the light from inside your house go out the window and reflect back so that you can see into that darkness?
Be in a dark house.
No, because given what you just described, I would say you open it up, the light is killed in the room, and you get to see some magic means.
Okay.
You get to look at through a spectrum you don't normally access.
I pictured myself turning off all the lights like I do when there's a storm to watch out the window. Like turning off all the lights and looking out at the abyssal zone.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that half of the answer to this question is figuring out the rules to this question.
Good question.
Which to me, you asked the question, I thought of outer space, and I was like, and whatever, I'm sure the rules will be fine, so outer space will work.
Sure.
As opposed to, so what are the rules?
Question four?
That was four.
That was question four.
That was four. Five.
I've asked this before, but I want to see if you're... if your answers have changed. Mm. If you could grow an extra thing things. I did say
like on my body.
On your body.
Mm.
A thing or things. What would you grow and where would you put it?
And this could be like gills or wings or a third arm or
a carapace wing.
So not just an extra, but an additional. Is also the word, like something that I don't have.
Anything.
Something on my body. So grow something organically on my body.
Yep.
You get an organic expansion pack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. That was very good.
I would like horns.
What kind and where?
I would like them to be curved ram's horns, mm-hmm. and I would like them on my head because I already have very sheepy hair, and I think that would be very good. And then I think it would be... The only thing is, I don't like to be talked to by strangers. And I feel like having horns would make strangers talk to me more.
It's
probably
an invitation for
it's
conversation.
An invitation. So maybe I'll change it to hooves. And also I can have boots.
Hoof covers.
Yeah.
I have
so you'd be part really goat is what I'm really hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have horns, people, are those real horns? No, costume.
Yeah.
And then you just walk off?
Yeah.
But then you're that girl who wears horns in public. Which
I don't care about
you
that.
You don't people don't talk to you.
Jesus Christ, Nick. She goes to Convergence and she worked at the Renaissance Festival.
You work with social convention of repulsion and avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
She's around people who wear horns.
Yeah, I just like the idea of having horns. I think it'd be nice to just be able to be like, to knock them and touch them. I think horns are pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy. They would offer me nothing.
So I think it would be probably wings, and I realize the wings are kind of a boring answer, but let me explain for just a moment that I am somewhat afraid of heights. I don't stop myself from doing things in spite of being afraid of heights. But there are some things that I can't manage to do. Like there's a trail called Angel's Trail in Zion National Park where you basically have to walk along this ridge where it's a sheer drop off on either side of you. And it's only about 3 feet of trail. And then on either side is death. And if I had wings, I could do that trail. Not because I'd fly across it, but because I could walk across it and not be worried that if I slipped, I was going to fall and die.
If you slipped, you'd fall and die.
No, because I'd have wings.
Molly's talking about me and my fear of bridges specifically. But
I think it sounds awesome. It
sounds like fucking hell.
One man's heaven, another man's hell.
The only thing I can think of, it's like the polar opposite of Molly, is what problems I could fix. with myself, mm-hmm. or with the human body and the lack of design there. Mm-hmm. And I think about, like, you know, how shitty our spines are for walking upright and things like that, and how things like that could be fixed. And one of the things I keep coming back to is the fact that our air, food, and water hole is all the same hole, and that seems really
yours is
dumb. And I think if maybe last time I might have said gills, but mm-hmm. now I'm thinking maybe like a blowhole or something, like another an air only orifice might be nice. I know it's rife for comedic exploitation.
Did you know? No, air only orifice is a really unfunny sentence.
but I see where you're going.
Yeah, that, I think.
And then your throat would only be for liquids and foods.
Yeah,
so you wouldn't breathe through your throat.
Well, optionally, I still could, right, for talking and stuff. But see, talking is when you breathe out. So I could breathe.
Talking is when you breathe out.
Yeah. I could breathe in through my blowhole while I'm like eating or drinking.
That's true.
And then exhale as I speak through my mouth and esophagus.
That's a wonderful. I think that's lovely. But every time you say blowhole, I get.
I don't want a stoma. Like,
you said like an extra kidney or a second liver or three boobs.
Yeah, I thought about that.
No, I like what you said. I would like to restructure my body to have the capability to have the jumping ability of a flea.
Mm-hmm.
It can jump 80 times its height. I'm 6'2", but we'll just go with 6 feet. So that's 480 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that means not only could I launch and have my body sustain that, but it could land and sustain that, which means I'd also be pretty fast and fairly strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to restructure my body to basically just support itself so it could do that.
It's really telling that I can't even run anymore because of my knees. And in no way did my brain go, fix your knees.
Yeah.
Maybe I should fix my knees.
I didn't give you much time. I just
it's true. So, yeah. I want to change mine to a set of eyes that with extraordinary vision that leads in further into the infrared and ultraviolet.
Can they just be where your regular eyes are? I don't really want you to have another set of eyes.
That would be my preference, is to have just two eyes still.
I think I should just fix my knees.
But I would like to be able to see like some combination of an eagle and a mantis shrimp or something like that, where I can see very far at extreme detail, up close incredibly well, and then also further into the spectrums than the human vision. I think that'd be dope.
Well, Molly, with my Thanos glove, I'll just fix you.
That'd be better, because I was just sitting here, I'm like, Molly, you're literally suffering from like depression because you can't run anymore, and you're like, horns.
What kind of legs? So think of it this way, Molly. If you're getting new legs.
I like my legs.
What kind? Well, would you just do the same legs but not
just better knees?
Just better
what
knees.
About what about I thought knees. I thought you wanted the hooves.
Well, but the hooves don't help the knees, I don't think, unless I can get a hoof knee combo.
Well, yeah, like you could get a hoof knee combo. Why not?
Can I get a hoof knee combo, Tony agrees.
I just snapped it. So let it be written, so let it be done.
Yeah, these are good.
As above, so below. Knees and hooves.
Knees and hooves.
Fantastic. Tony, it's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Wait, did Tony answer that fifth question?
He did.
Yeah, the jumping like a
right, 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 right. Sorry, I wanted to make sure that I had
super jump.
Okay, sorry, sorry
super
to interrupt.
Jump.
Sorry,
super fleet.
Oh, no, yeah.
When this goes up, I think there are 3 weekends left at the Minnesota. No, there'll be 2 weekends left at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival when this goes up.
And then where do you go next?
North Carolina.
Okay.
And this is this year and next, because of the calendar, I'll be here the last three. I'll be here the last weekend.
That's exciting.
Which is fantastic.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Our final day is a good one.
Yeah. And by the way, it was very nice seeing you guys out
there. Yeah.
And I always see Tim usually in the morning. And then at the end, when he looks like a truck ran over him and he's exhausted on Sunday evenings because he puts it all out there. And I honor that, Tim. I just want to say that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You should see me when I come home and Pat wants to tell me all the stories from the weekend and I fall asleep in the middle of it. It's just I'm the worst husband ever. I really am.
Well, it's because she's boring. You just have to lean into that.
Tim, I hate to tell you this, but she knew you worked at the Renaissance Festival when she married you.
I think she did.
Because that's how long you fucking worked out there.
Long time. We're curious to know, listeners, if you have answers to 20 questions, we would share those answers with him if you send them our way. I'm sure he's curious, professionally curious, to know what your answers are to those questions. You can also answer our regular five questions. Send your answers to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. We'll get them, all three of us. It's great. shout out and thank you to our patrons for supporting us. Tony remarked about our recording equipment and setup when he came in to record with us. And I said, that's because of our patrons, our generosity of people that listen to the podcast, helping us, you know, pay the bills and keep it afloat for hosting and stuff. So thanks, folks. It really means a lot to us. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with more geeky, godless fun.
Bye.
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 I personally am very tolerant of punching Nazis.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I'm still older than all of you.